During the course of the war in Gaza, a number of pro-Palestinian activists and commentators have characterized Israel's actions in the war as genocide. And now South Africa and other nations have formally charged Israel with the crime. Dr. Jawida Siyazi is an attorney with a dual specialization in cross-border disputes and international criminal investigations. She spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg before the case was heard by the International Court of Justice.
What about the legality of the idea of charging Israel with genocide? You mentioned that there's some discussion about whether it should be through the ICC or the IJC. So what's the difference there, and why would one be more of an advantage over the other?
Sure. So thank you for having me. The first thing that to understand the difference between the two institutions is to make a distinction between state responsibility for a national crime and individual criminal responsibility or liability. Individual responsibility and state responsibility are entirely different things, and people tend to conflate between the two. The Genocide Convention of 1948 recognizes actually responsibility at both the state and individual levels and calls for accountability at both. So a state can violate its obligation arising under the Genocide Convention by committing genocide. In doing so, the state engages its state responsibility rather than commit a state crime. You know, state do not commit crime, individual do. On the other hand, individual criminal liability involves holding individuals criminally responsible for international crimes. And so the International Criminal Court, otherwise known as the ICC, which is the global tribunal set up in 2002 by the Rome Statute, hold accountable perpetrators of war crimes, crimes against humanity, genocide, and the crimes of aggression. The ICC is empowered to prosecute these individuals, not states. So the conduct of state is adjudicated to the International Court of Justice, which sits also in The Hague, in the Netherlands. The ICJ, the difference is that the ICJ is the principal judicial organ of the United Nations. It is a dispute resolution mechanism. It is a state-centric court. Its role is to settle, according to international law, dispute between sovereign state and to give advisory opinions in on legal questions referred to it by authorized UN organs and specialized agencies. So that's the difference. One has to do with individual criminal culpability, and the other has to do with state responsibility.
We've seen that some of the people brought before the ICC have been leaders of what we might call less powerful countries. And you don't hear about people from the United States or Russia or China being brought before the court. So is that a problem? And would it be a problem with the IJC as well? I mean, don't the states have to agree to participate in the process?
On your first point, I agree that the International Criminal Court has been, I say, accused, rightly, I have to say, of double standard and selective accountability for years and years. But we have seen that actually more recently in the Ukraine situation, for instance. The court has been very selective in accountability on account of the cases it chooses and not to choose to prosecute. For instance, in the case of the situation in Ukraine, it took the current prosecutor very few time to be on the ground in Kiev to actually inform or made statement to the effect that his investigation was already active, to indict actually none other than Russian President Vladimir Putin and to issue arrest warrant. In the situation, if I take just the example of Palestine, the situation have been opened in 2015 by the former prosecutor Fatou Bensouda, and really nothing happened since then. In 2021, when Karim Khan took over, we in the international legal community were really hopeful that he would study what he finds. Unfortunately, throughout this period, the ICC Palestine investigation remained non-existent practically. And in this particular case, in light of the situation in Gaza, the prosecutor didn't say much in terms of the crimes that are being committed. And I have to say, on both sides, he did say that he went no further, actually, than asserting that credible allegation of crimes, and I quote, may or may have not been committed, and if they may have been committed, and they would be the subject of a timely independent examination investigation. So, you know, the wheels of a national justice at The Hague are very slow by any standard. But in this particular case, we didn't see any action being taken in you know, forcefully condemning and undertaking basically any proceeding with respect to the crimes being committed. And I must add, on both sides.
And how about the idea of states voluntarily having to participate? Would that be necessary? Because there's no coercive mechanism, right, that the IJC has?
Yeah, there are no coercive mechanism. You know, the ICJ would have. So the problem, in 2021, an advisory opinion was requested by the court, the International Court of Justice, to issue an advisory opinion on the situation in the occupied territories, including Gaza, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem. And the court has a problem of jurisdiction because Israel has made reservation for any treaty that the Palestinian Authority has signed. So it does not recognize any of the treaties that have been signed by the Palestinian Authority. In the case of proceeding before the ICJ, it has to be another state. The Palestinian cannot do that on their own. Any state party to the Genocide Convention will have to bring proceeding before the International Court of Justice, an application for provisional measures, again, because Israel will ignore any orders from the ICJ and it will probably take years for any hearing on the merit. But based on my own experience and what has happened more recently in other cases involving the Genocide Convention, including specifically the Gambia v. Myanmar case, we've seen, unlike other previous cases, the court has really moved swiftly in issuing provisional measures against Myanmar to cease and desist act of genocide and to prevent evidence of the same. So we are hoping that in this situation, in addition to the advisory opinion that the court is in upcoming hearing on February 19 on the advisory opinion case, but we are hoping that a case would be filed by a state party to the Genocide Convention against Israel for Israel violation of its treaty obligation under the Genocide Convention, and an application for provisional measures would be brought. I'm thinking, of course, about a number of cases or coalition of cases. Actually, it would be better to have a country like South Africa, Bolivia, Jordan. Brazil. South Africa is a very good candidate for obvious reason. And so that's what we're hoping for.
Could you talk about the significance of Articles 2 and 3?
Yes. Article 2 basically lists the underlying act of the crime of genocide. There are five underlying acts which are replicated in Article 6 of the Rome Statute. And so it would be killing, it would be causing grave bodily or mental harm, infliction of or imposing condition calculated to bring about the destruction of the group. So these are the three of the five acts that are rousing evidence that three of these or the five acts under Article 2 of the Genocide Convention have been committed by Israel. The Genocide Convention embodies the idea that the regime can commit genocide by act other than killing. You know, genocide is colloquially thought of as mass murder, as extermination. But the Genocide Convention embodies the idea that a regime can destroy a group of people based on their nationality, ethnic origin, religious, and other bases only because they are part of that group. And so what we see happening here, not only there is indiscriminate and actually organized killing, but there is also the imposition of condition that would lead to the slow death of the Palestinian people. Siege warfare is an egregious but proliferating tactic of war, which is prohibited under international humanitarian law. And it has been used, unfortunately, in many conflicts, but we we're seeing it used in Gaza with the purpose of destroying a group of people.
So it could be done by starvation, for example.
Absolutely. Siege warfare is a very, very, is a lethal weapon of war, like sexual violence, forcible displacement as well. The jurisprudence of both of the International Court of Justice in many of these cases, but also at the ICC, in Sudan case and the Bashir case, has concluded that genocide can be committed with other acts than mass killing.
That's Attorney Juida Siyazi speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on January 11th, 2024.